This is Barbara Glickstein, and you're listening to Health Cetera, produced by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Amy Siskin is my guest. She's a national spokesperson, writer, and expert on helping women and girls advance and succeed. A highly successful Wall Street executive, Amy Siskin is co-founder and president of The New Agenda, a national organization working on issues including economic independence and advancement, gender representation and bias, sexual assault, and domestic violence. Amy joins me today to talk about The New Agenda's new multimedia action project, Gray Matters. Welcome to Health Cetera.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I jumped in and watched these videos, both as a concerned citizen, feminist, parent, and public health nurse, and that lens really provided lots of thoughts and questions. But first, before I speak to that, will you please speak to Gray Matters and the conception behind this project and why New Agenda has taken it on?
Well, as an organization, we have been advocating on campus sexual assault and teen dating violence since we started in 2008. It was the original issue our foundation chose to focus on because we felt that so much of sexism, which is the main focus of our organization, originated in the media's role in how young women are treated and sexualized. So that's how we got to that issue. And it's only in the last few years after the Yale Title IX lawsuit brought some national attention to the issue of campus sexual assault that we've really seen it get some real traction and national awareness, long lost, and thankfully. So the way we came up with the concept for Gray Matters is because we've been involved with this issue, we feel like we have a very good insight into the dynamics of what is behind today's campus sexual assault and what people of our generation, Barbara, you and I, may not be as familiar with or understand. And again, going back to the media's role of simple matters of what's right and wrong, there's a lot of what I'll call gray areas, which is how we came up with Gray Matters. And one of those gray areas is a lot of young men don't understand that if a young woman or a young man is incapacitated, that they're not fair game. And that was why we chose to go in this particular direction.
Can you just refresh for the listeners who may not know about the Yale case, where that became, what that was, and how that actually has launched some legislation in some states, which we'll talk about in just a moment?
Sure. So under Title IX, we know Title IX for women's sports mostly, but it also is the equivalent of what the EEOC does when you work in a company to guarantee you a safe place to work. Title IX, when you're in college, guarantees you as a woman or a man student a safe campus experience. And what Yale students did, Yale men and women, for the first time in, I believe it was 2011, they filed a Title IX lawsuit saying that Yale had created a hostile environment for its women students. There had been a number of incidents at Yale, but what precipitated this was a group of frat boys being led around campus yelling, "No means yes, yes means anal." And that was the impetus or the final shoe that dropped that had a number of students file a lawsuit. So Yale was the first, but a number of other colleges followed thereafter, and it caused the Obama administration, mostly at that point under Vice President Biden and Arne Duncan, to bring awareness to the issue and to tell colleges that they would be under investigation, every college and university, for how they handled their sexual assault on campus. And if they were mishandling those cases, they would risk losing federal funding. And currently, close to 300 colleges and universities are under investigation, and the list continues to grow.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you is about these college campuses, and as you just mentioned, there are over 300 cases being investigated. Can a student and their guardians and parents test a college's sexual culture before considering applying there?
And absolutely they should. So I'll give the name of the link one time, but we'll talk about it again. Our videos, our organization is thenewagenda.net, and if you go to our website, it's under Stop Gray Matters. Or if you just do learn.stop with two P's, 5K.org, that's where the Gray Matters page is. And one of the resources we have there under Facts and Information is a link that gives the over 300 schools under investigation currently. So you can sort by state and see if the schools you're considering are under investigation.
And what if that school's not on there? What would be the kinds of ways that, look, I have two adult children of my own who've been through college and graduated. Some of this I didn't do, and I should have with them, although we had conversations about this, but checking out college campuses was not a checklist, was not on my checklist at that time, now 6 or 8 years ago. So there are policies and practices that are being put into place, including your work with the new agenda and now with this new Gray Matters multimedia project that is adaptable on college campuses. What I want to also point out to the listeners is that your movement is very much a grassroots movement and in the hands of college students. Can you explain that a little further?
Yeah, so one of the things that we found is, in addition to the lack of awareness, that bystander intervention can be very effective in preventing campus sexual assault. You know, one of the things that we feature in our video is the fact that 55% of students who witnessed what was the precursors of a sexual assault didn't act, and many of them didn't act because they didn't know what to do. So we try to offer some concrete items in our video as examples, as well as the resources on our website. But what we're, the STOP, which is the name of our campaign, ST and then PP, is Stop, Think, Protect Your Peers, because it's really imperative that in addition to what we as parents do in empowering our children with knowledge, that knowledge includes if you see something, stop and do something. So I think parents are increasingly need to be part of the solution, and I think if you're the mother or father of a daughter, you've always warned your daughters, but I think it's now something we've advocated for from the get-go is talking to your sons. I mean, you really don't want to get that call saying, Mom, my life is over. I've just been expelled from college because I didn't understand that this girl who passed out wasn't free game. And that's really what we're trying to, you know, enlighten. We're trying to touch on this from a number of different issues. But one is starting with parents before your children leave for school. You have to make sure your sons and daughters understand what is right and what is wrong, and there's a real blurred line now or gray area. So that's one thing. And I think, you know, as parents looking for colleges, you definitely, in addition to looking at this list, should be Googling the different schools and understanding the nature of what that environment is like. You know, as a parent who's daughter is now entering her sophomore year. I definitely did that as part of my exercise of considering colleges. There are some schools that really are just not that safe of a campus for young women. All of them have their problems, but it's definitely disproportional in terms of how schools are handling them and what their culture is like on campus. It's very important to understand that.
Well, some people assume that affirmative consent is only to protect women and punish men. Is affirmative consent a gender-free standard?
It's something that you have to be aware of. And what's happening in the last even year since we have been, you know, working on this issue and approaching college campuses, the campuses that are under investigation, but generally all campuses have now what's called a Title IX coordinator. I'm an alumni of Cornell, and a year ago I had spoken to our VP Student Life, and this year I went back to look at our Student Life page, and there's a whole team of Title IX officers. So Cornell is just one example of every school you talk to now, for the most part, has a Title IX coordinator, and that's because the schools are concerned about losing their federal funds. and they're also concerned about what we're talking about,
yes.
the media that comes out of their mishandling of being the next Stanford or the next Brigham Young, and the list is long, and losing students wanting to apply. So what's going to happen now? There's two states that have affirmative consent, California and New York. For the SUNY schools and the California State schools, they do have affirmative consent, meaning you need to say yes in order to receive to it, in order for it being consent. Or as Vice President Biden said at the convention, no consent means no. Mm-hmm. So it's very plain and clear. And that is kind of the zeitgeist of where things are headed, that and in part because of the nature of today's rape is often, again, like the Brock Turner case in Stanford, the presumption that if a woman is passed out, that she's fair game, and the needing to correct that, you know, misnomer. So I think as parents of sons, you really are playing a game of Russian roulette if you send your son off not understanding simply what you view as right is wrong. I mean, there have been studies done that almost half of high school boys don't understand that notion, that if a girl is really drunk and incapacitated, that having sex with her is rape. So we really as parents have responsibilities, if not for the right reason, that it's morally right, for the reason that you don't want your son to be expelled and have, you know, his record become like a Brock Turner and have this follow him for life. So the pendulum is swinging towards affirmative consent in some shape or form.
A moment ago when you talked about, and your video beautifully shows it, the Gray Matters project of the New Agenda Foundation, are the bystander behavior. So can you give some examples of that? People not turning away when they see something, what would they see? What are some of the scenarios that parents can, and people who are listening who are of this age, better understand what they can do and not... not just giggle or say, wow, she's totally drunk, or what the other things that happen fairly regularly in bar scenes in cities, not just on college campus.
Right. And so what we did in our video was we dramatized an actual rape because it's so much different than the time when I was in college. And in the scenario, it's a young woman who was at a party. Somebody put something in her drink, and she suddenly things became blurry. So a friend of hers was with her. She was with a couple of people from the dorm. One didn't walk her home. The other did, and he raped her in the dorm as she was incapacitated. So the nature of today's rape is, as we mentioned in the video, predominantly almost all the victims knew their rapists. And a lot of cases, in this case as well, not only did her closer friend not walk her home, when she got back to the dorm and was walking down the hallway, friends saw her that could have done something and didn't say something. So there were all sorts of periods of time from the point where she was clearly out of character at the party where her friend should have said, you know, I saw another cute guy. In this case, it was a gay guy friend who saw a cute guy across the room. You know what? I'm going to walk you home even though you say you don't need me to walk you home and get you home safely. The other things that we talk about in the video, if you do witness something after it happens and have a friend who was raped, we wanted to give a message that would be the same message we could give to all college women because every state has different laws. Depending where your college is, it might be better for you to call the city police or it might be better for you to call your campus police. It really depends, but because we were giving the same message to all campuses, what we were told from an expert we worked with, the one bit of advice to give to everybody if you have a friend who was raped is to get them to, in the video we say, the nearest medical center because that might be your campus medical center. If you're in a city, it might be a hospital in the city. But get a rape kit done mm-hmm. just to prove, you know, that initially there's a level of shock and your friend might not want to, as in this case, admit to herself or himself that they are a victim. But if you get the rape kit, it does provide proof, and it opens the door for pursuing some sort of charges, either be the criminal charge or more often it's on campus with getting the student, the perpetrator. arbitrate or expelled. But that's what you can do the next morning if you have a friend that tells you something happened, or if you see somebody on campus who has been attacked, or it's, attacked is usually not the word, somebody who was sexually assaulted without their will, to get them to your campus medical center or the hospital and get a rape kit. So those are the types of things before and after we advise most simplistically in this video.
I want to mention that not all emergency rooms have what's called a sexual assault nurse examiner, or referred to as a SANE nurse, S-A-N-E. But if you are a person that is yourself going to an emergency room and or bringing a friend who has been sexually assaulted, it is very often that someone who's been trained specifically in caring for a person who's been sexually assaulted will be called in not only to do a rape kit, but to also call in other counseling as needed, help you be set up with a follow-up care, and to be able to talk to people about it. But let's talk about how often or how difficult, how we can help people understand this powerful urge that many victims of sexual assault feel, denying that they've been raped, denying that this has happened, how this violence that's already happened to them contributes to a denial, as well as really a culture that continues to dehumanize victims almost at every turn, sometimes in the police, with the police, sometimes in the medical center, sometimes in the courts.
Yes, and I think generally, and this is a bold generalization, that the campuses, because they are under such close scrutiny now by our government, are probably a better way to pursue charges, and they're much more attuned to treating their students and treating these cases properly than in some states. Again, it depends on the state, but in many states, there's archaic laws, including New York State, for how you classify rape that does not typically work for college cases. So, you know, bearing that in mind, a very important theme that we bring up in the video is the notion of victim blame and the woman saying, it's not my fault. And that's very important to understand because this is a gut-wrenching decision and our culture is so far behind on this, is the bad news. The good news is when women are speaking out, they've become such powerful change makers. Again, think of the Brock Turner case and the woman who wrote that amazing letter and Vice President Biden responding to it, the whole country responding to it. Increasingly, you're seeing women who speak out, not only in this venue, but it's all the same, you know, cousins of demeaning women. I mean, look at Gretchen Carlson's case with Roger Ailes and Fox News, where, again, it was the same thing of, oh, it's her, it's not him, people defending him. But voices are ringing out, and I do see some change, and I think it's just so important, not only for the victims, for, you know, for where they're going, if they feel that they have that support network, and it's most important that we give them that support network, if they feel brave enough to have their voice, or as we say in the video, to find their voice, I think we as a culture and we as friends and we as family want to not hide this in the shadows. We want the victim to come out and speak out, to write about what happened to her or to pursue charges and get her rapist expelled from campus. The colleges are just becoming much more cognizant of the nature of today's rape and all the these gray matters or gray areas. They understand much more now about what constitutes consent and much more leaning towards affirmative consent. And again, it's an individual decision as to whether you pursue or not. I think what you do with going to a medical center is you preserve the right for your friend, if she decides she wants to pursue something, to have some physical evidence that something did occur, and to maybe, as you mentioned, have an interview in addition to the physical evidence, and have that potentially start the ball rolling if the victim wants this ball to start rolling. But it's, yes, there's that initial shock that I think it's very important that we as advocates in all forms are there as a support for the person, the victim. I've been saying she, but that's a misnomer. Mm-hmm. It's one in 16 men are also victims. But she or he has time to then decide whether they want to pursue these charges.
There's another very positive thing, and in addition to all these positive reasons for affirmative consent that I've read about, and it's as young people are embracing affirmative consent, there is an absolute relationship between that and more positive sexual experiences. I know that the new agenda is about empowering women, and you are sex positive as well, that part of being a healthy being is having a full sexual experience and identifying who you are as you emerge as a young adult. And I've actually read that both males and females and those in the LGBTQ community in the affirmative consent experience are actually saying, no, I don't like that. Yes, I like that. And that's part of a positive sexual experience all around. Have you come across these conversations with the young men and women that you encounter?
You know, I think that is just starting to be discussed. I think as students go back to campus this year, I think there's a lot more discussion of actual verbal consent. It's an awkward conversation still. I think it's a conversation that's still just starting, and a conversation that, frankly, for our generation is hard to understand because the nature of what was campus sexual assault back then was just, you know, much different. But I do agree that, yes, for straight, for gay, for, you know, for all different types of sexual interactions, the communication, yes, is extremely important, and it's something that can, as you said, make it a better experience once it's just something that people are used to doing. So, yes, absolutely.
And how effective is as a policy perspective on this issue, is there hope that every state would legislate the mandating of teaching affirmative consent on college campuses? Is that something you feel is an important part of this? How impactful is that? And obviously there are many paths to making sure the culture changes.
Yeah, so I think you'll see that more. I mean, obviously the first two were California and New York, which have governors that are on the politically left side, and it only applies in those two states for their state-funded colleges. Mm-hmm. So it's a beginning, it's a start, it doesn't cover the private colleges in those states. I think we're coming at it from a number of different ways. I think being on this list for investigation under Title IX and the risk of losing federal monies was a real wake-up call to a lot of the schools, and I think they've wanted to sweep this under the rug because it's a poor reflection on their university or their college if they have a rape get into the media, and look what's happening with Stanford, but they're, or Yale, or, you know, we all have heard about these cases. So I think it's coming about in a lot of different ways. I do believe because our laws at the justice level are so archaic and each state is so different, it's a patchwork of different laws relating to rape, that it really would help our students more immediately if it were the colleges themselves that set up protocols and are more attuned to the students' needs. You had mentioned in our conversation the notion of counseling, and in the case we portrayed, the student had one counseling session, and that was it, mm-hmm. and didn't report it. Initially was giving one counseling session and sent off on her merry way. So that's not okay.
No, that's not adequate.
Right. So I think the schools are going, you know, getting up the learning curve quickly from a lot of different perspectives, but I do believe it comes about better from the schools themselves, be it the state schools via their governor or via the private schools because they're concerned about losing their Title IX funding.
We have just a moment left, and you on your site have three messages which sort of would sum up much of what you said today of what people need to do, and I'm wondering if I can ask you to recall them. There were three specific things, including the final one was your awareness on the campus race that's scheduled for this October.
Right. So I wanted to, in terms of finding all of this information that we're talking about, our organization is The New Agenda, and our website's thenewagenda.net. There's a tab called STOP, which is, again, Stop, Think, Protect Your Peers, and we'll be running races on college campuses over two weekends in October to raise awareness and hope to end this epidemic of sexual assault. The main run will be at Iona College in New Rochelle, which is an easy commute from the tri-state area, either via public transportation or it's right off Route 95. So we're hoping to host a big run there, and then we have runs at seven other college campuses this year. But so we are approaching this from the standpoint of activism. And also under the STOP, you'll see the Gray Matters page, which is our educational videos and resources. And we just released the videos already. Two colleges, well, a college and a major university, are using them as part of their freshman orientation and training for their resident assistants and so forth. So we're hoping that everybody can pass those videos along to their children's Title IX coordinator at their college or their own university where they're an alumni and ask them to use these videos. They are free. We also have a form for high school students to watch with their parents. And then start a discussion. The things that we talk about in our video are bystander intervention, victim blame, and the gray areas of consent, which is a very good start for having a conversation and starting to raise awareness and starting to work towards ending this epidemic.
My guest was Amy Siskin. She's the co-founder and president of The New Agenda. We talked today about their new multimedia project, Gray Matters. Find out more about thenewagenda.net and about the programs called STOP, S-T-O-P-P, on that tab. Thank you for joining me today on HealthCetera.
Thank you so much, Barbara.